It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And let's do that. Let's talk legal, and let's welcome in our two legal experts from Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good. And Wes Collins in studio. Good morning,
good
Wes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm here.
You're here. I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you're there, Cecil. Hey, we're going to talk about a topic today that we haven't discussed in some time, but it's something that's very important to our listeners and anybody else out there that has loved ones aging in our society here, and that's the how to protect assets from nursing home expenses, long-term care. That's a big topic to unpack, but let's take a crack at it, Cecil.
Sure. Well, Mike, let's just begin by saying that probably the most significant or real threat to many of our clients' estate assets now is, in fact, the potential for long-term care, medical stay, a nursing home stay.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that our clients were threatened by estate tax. Estate tax now is quite high, $10 million per person. That might come down a bit, but even if it does, it's still going to be, several million per individual. And that many times doesn't touch and concern our clients, a large portion
sure.
of them. Also, another threat to the estate, sometimes people think it's the cost of probate or something of that nature. That's not a very real or realistic concern. Probate is easy and friendly and less expensive in North Carolina than most any other state. We have, clients that will, pass on 1 week, and we have the estate open in Good Carteret County or Craven County the very following week. We
mm-hmm.
don't have the delay that we see in a lot of the industrial states like Illinois or Pennsylvania, New York, states like that. So absolutely, Mike, one of the most significant and very real threats to the assets of our clients could be that one or the two of them could potentially need a long-term nursing home stay. And that begins now, the figure just keeps getting higher and higher. Wes and I, when we first started in this practice many years ago, it was around $5,000, and that's what we talked about. Now it's, upwards of $7,000, can even be more than that. So absolutely, our clients need to know that there is an area of law known as asset protection planning that they can consult with our law firm about. We can sit down with them. We can go through their assets. We can show them the way in which we stage this this planning. Again, it's contingency planning. All of us hope and pray that we will not have to go into any kind of skilled care facility. But we want to have a contingency plan in effect if for some reason those facts or circumstances were to confront our family. And I know I'm talking in general terms right now, but I just think these things are very important in terms of an introduction, is that, so many people just think there isn't anything that they can do. They also are very tripped up by this, quote, five-year look-back rule.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like that they haven't done it soon enough. And so what Wes and I want to communicate very clearly this morning is, seek out your consultation, because there are things that we can do to work around the five-year look-back rule, and there are certainly things that we can do to put a plan in effect for the future, and we can also implement a plan pretty quickly if a client has waited to the last minute.
And now I'll ask this question. That's what everything you've illustrated there is amazing when you think of the cost. And those that $7,000 number is a monthly cost, and you just multiply that by 12 for an annual cost, $84,000. You can eat through someone's nest egg rather quickly. And I'll ask this question, and Wes is here, and Cecil, of course, you can answer as well. this is somebody who wants to have asset protection. We're not talking about necessarily just a person in their later years. This could be someone in their early years, their middle age, or someone such as myself, age 59. When do people start thinking about this? When do people start thinking about asset protection? But more importantly, when should they start thinking about asset protection?
I would say, Mike, that people generally start thinking about this personally, individually, you know, in their 50s, something like that, certainly 60s, 70s, you know, getting into closer to the retirement years.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, that's a personal concern. In many cases, we have maybe the children who are concerned about the parents. So maybe the concern starts with the children, and maybe they're in their 30s or 40s or 50s, and the parent may be in the 70s, 80s, or even 90s. And it could be that there's a concern about an aunt or an uncle or a concern about a grandparent, mm-hmm. you know, to make sure that the assets are structured in a way so we don't end up in a failure to plan posture, as we all hear that quite often, you know, planning to fail. Failure mm-hmm. to plan is planning to fail. So this really, in many cases, is very consistent with your standard estate planning. You know, if you're a young person and you're relatively young, you're just starting to work, and maybe you've just had a child and you're married, that type of thing. This is probably not on the forefront of your mind, but what is would be to make sure you have a good solid will with a guardianship provision as to who's the guardian of the child would be. You start thinking about, you know, life insurance in mm-hmm. the event that you pass, so the child will be taken care of because you probably haven't built much wealth yet. You know, power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, living will, those type of things. So that's the kind of on the younger side of the spectrum. But I would say certainly they're in the 50s. So the way this kind of frames up, though, is, you know, we get all kinds of questions regarding this, Mike. You know, I heard there's something you can do to protect your house. I mean, that's a question mm-hmm. we get all the
property.
Time.
Sure.
I transferred my house. I did a deed. I think it was called a quit claim deed or something like that to my son. Was that okay?
Oops.
You know, maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
That's back to what Cecil said. You know, sitting down with someone who knows what they're doing with regard to this, which we have several lawyers at our office, me, Cecil, Andrew Foster, who are very highly trained with regard to how to deal with these issues because we deal with them every single day,
mm-hmm.
are certainly you know, very good choices for folks to sit down with to discuss your particular situation.
Your options.
Because everybody's situation is different as it relates to the family makeup, as it relates to what health issues we may have, what family history we have, what assets there are, you know, what your concerns are, what level of protection you want to get involved in. But just that education, just that understanding as to what can be done is, I think, you know, certainly vitally important and can really save folks a ton of money and assets that a lot of these people we deal with have worked their entire life to accumulate these things that we're protecting.
Mm-hmm.
And a mere failure to sit down and plan and put an effective plan in place can, in some very unfortunate circumstances, decimate a entire life savings because just a failure to plan.
Yeah. And that example you use, Wes, about the parent transferring the house to his son for a dollar may have tax implications that the son never thought about, nor did the father think about, just kind of did it on their own, kind of
right.
a wildcat, versus sitting down with you, Cecil, or Andrew, and mapping out contingencies and options and possibilities.
Right. Transfer basis, tax issues with regard to the five-year look-back period. Issues with regard to the home, which is maybe the mother or the father is still living in as their home,
mm-hmm.
but we're now subjecting it to the twists and turns of the son's life.
Yeah.
Whether the son, you know, has a financial issue himself, has to file bankruptcy, and then your house is hung up in that. Whether the son, you know, ends up, unfortunately, maybe ending up in a divorce posture,
sure.
and that's an asset that may be part of that as well, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the son, you know, gets in a car accident and hurts someone and then gets sued as a result of that. And then your home is potentially subject to a judgment. So there are ways, there are things that, you know, doing the simple deed, you know, if you do that and do that alone and kind of mindlessly do that, that can create problems.
And Cecil, you mentioned earlier that these are contingencies as far as asset protection from nursing home expenses, long-term care. So if you put them in place and you don't, if you never go into a nursing home or long-term care, no harm, no foul, right?
Correct. But I think it would, I think our listeners would like to hear this, is that these files, Mike, almost every day frame up to be either an apple or an orange. The apple is that good people are coming in, as we've discussed now, in their 50s, 60s, 70s, maybe 80s, and they know that this contingency could affect their life. It could become reality that they need skilled care.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to set up a plan to mitigate against those costs. Now that's an apple. That's, you know, kind of a section of clients that we see every day. The other section of clients that we also see are clients that are really in the midst of it. They are, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mom has gone to the hospital. She is now at Crystal Bluff. She is now at Taylor Extended. She's up at Cherry Point Ridge, and she is, And the family is being told that mom will not be able to return home, very likely that she might not be able to return home, and they are clearly in the midst of it. Now, in the middle of it, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what Wes and I want to communicate to everyone who's listening is that we are here to help you in either scenario, because I can tell you that there are folks that say to me sometimes, you know, we would have come in sooner to see you, but we didn't think there was anything that could be done. You know, and that's, again, in that second scenario where they're in the midst of it. They may go through a year or more or even longer, and then suddenly some friend or family member tells them, I think maybe you need to seek some legal advice because I'm the one that happened to hear, you know, on the radio or did some reading about asset protection planning. So we see both types of files, both factual scenarios, and I just wanted to make that clear. But back to your question, Mike, the classic plan for 50, 60, 70-year-old that is trying to plan to mitigate against these kinds of costs if they were to come their way, that's going to begin with the development of a trust that is going to absolutely hold the real estate holdings of the client. And so once these real estate holdings or land, their home, any other lands that they happen to have, you know, are put in a different cubbyhole other than in their individual name, because when the client comes in, usually the homes and the real properties are owned in the good name of John and Mary Sue.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want them to remain in the name of John and Mary Sue. We want to place them in a different posture, in a different cubbyhole, and that cubbyhole is, you know, a trust. And that then takes that particular asset off the radar screen for purposes of the kind of, it basically puts the posture of that property into a position where it is protected, which, of course, is what this planning is all about. That is going to be the first stage of the planning. We, of course, at that time, will shore up that famous document. What is that famous document, Mike? We talk about it practically every program, the durable power of attorney. We are going to look very carefully at that. Wes is going to review that thoroughly. I am myself, and we are going to make sure that it has the grants of authority that the children, the agents are going to need in order to make future kinds of transfers to the trust. Once we have the trust established and we have the real property titled in the name of the trust, that file now at this point can go on hold. That's step one that's been completed, and we can wait for the facts to develop. And, of course, we hope and pray that they won't develop. that either mother or dad needs skilled care. But if either one of them do, then we'll pull that file out. Those clients would come back in at this time, very likely, of course, with a child or children, and we will begin to discuss with them what we can do to protect the liquid side of their assets, meaning stocks, bonds, securities, things of that nature. So it's a two-step process, number one being the real estate, number two being the liquidity of the estate, and so that's the way these files frame up.
Makes sense. You've made the complex simple and understand there, and that's an important topic. Let's take a rest on that point right here. We'll take a quick break and come back, and we're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell & Collins. If you'd like to get advice from Harvell & Collins, call today, 252-726-9050. We'll be right back after this quick break. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And Cecil, if you'll allow me, I always like to sometimes bring in my personal life to your conversation because it hits home all the time. And I want to give you this scenario, and I talked to Wes about it. I have a 90-year-old mother-in-law living alone in a home in Swansboro. If she were to do this, what you just prescribed, would there be a five-year look back on her property if we tried to protect it?
I can go ahead and answer that. So in the event that there was just a straight deed transfer, which is not what we recommend, then absolutely a five-year look-back period. And that means that no eligibility for any type of long-term care Medicaid benefits to cover those $7,000, $7,500 monthly expenses in a nursing home, mm-hmm. if that presented itself. But the planning techniques that we employ that Cecil talked about a moment ago, just in very general terms, using the trust to protect the property is an immediate protection of the property. There's no look-back period whatsoever.
Okay.
Say on day one, mm-hmm. we do the planning. On day two, she slips and falls, has to go to a nursing home. That home you talked about is a non-countable asset and not subject to any type of lien or estate recovery at all based on the planning that we've done. Now, in the event we put that planning in place and she never needs it,
mm-hmm.
go back to your question before.
Right.
Well, the property then passes pursuant to the terms of the trust upon her death. It just goes out to whomever her will would normally say it went to.
Mm-hmm.
During the time the property's in the trust, it's hers. She uses it how she wants to. She possesses it how she wants to. Tax bill still comes to her, mm-hmm. as far as the yearly taxes. So this is really a structure of the ownership of the property in the trust, as opposed to a loss of any benefit of the property whatsoever. So to put that in simple terms, it's all on paper.
Yeah.
But that paper is vitally important.
And legal.
And absolutely legal. It's done, you know, no question whatsoever. Because, you know, think about this. We do the planning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the person then has to go to apply for the benefits at some point in time.
Sure.
Well, if the planning doesn't work, who do you think the client's then going to call? Us.
Yeah. Right.
It works because it's the law. It's what the law allows you to do. It's just understanding how that law works as it relates to, you know, these issues, these factual scenarios.
And Cecil and Wes, in that same scenario, if my 90-year-old mother-in-law doesn't do anything and tomorrow slips and falls and finds herself in a nursing home, then what happens to the property?
Right. So in the event that she has done no planning whatsoever, and the home is in her name, and she's single, right?
She is, yes.
Okay.
A widower.
She's in a nursing home. She can, under the law, sign a document called an intent to return home. If she has no other assets, then that property would not be counted against her for Medicaid benefits, for long-term care benefits at all. But upon her passing, she still has the property.
Yeah.
The state would then place a lien on the property, for the amount of the services provided. Of course, if it's 1 year, it might be 80,000. If it's 2 years, it might be twice. 3 years, three times, 240. So 160, 240. So, then the way that works is they normally then hire a local attorney to then basically do what would be like a foreclosure sale of the house.
You mop it up.
To be reimbursed.
Yeah.
However, if the planning is done, every bit of that's avoided.
Nice. Gentlemen, we'll take a quick break and come back with our closing segment of Let's Talk Legal. An important topic, asset protection plans. You should all have one. And if you don't, call Harvell and Collins today, 252-726-9050. Go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back after this quick timeout. Well, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Gentlemen, I'll yield my time to you. We have about 2 or 3 minutes left.
I think, Mike, that a couple of the most typical questions is one question is, well, you've told me all about this trust. Now, what is a trust?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just do not know what that word means. A trust is just a contract between a creator of the trust, which would be, you know, the client or the client's child in these files, and the trustee, who again would be either the client or the client's child or other important person in their life for the benefit of a beneficiary. So it's a contract, mm-hmm. and the beneficiary, of course, would be similar, if not identical, to, you know, the last will and testament of the client, because the property eventually is going to pass to the heirs. So a trust is a contract. It's on paper. It's written down. It's typewritten. It's signed by these people that I just referred to, and it exists. The law then, of course, supports that a trust is a separate and distinct entity from we folks as individuals. We could use a corporation, which I think many of our listeners know is also a separate entity, but that requires an annual update, it requires annual maintenance with the Secretary of State, and it requires a tax return.
Right.
A trust, on the other hand, doesn't require any of those annual things. It does not require an update unless we need to change the trust in some way, but it doesn't have to have an update every year. It doesn't have to file a tax return because it's only owning real property, and all that is not necessarily generating income to the trust. And then also it is it doesn't have any state fee each and every year with the Secretary of State. But it absolutely stands, walks and talks as a separate legal entity. And so, and it's all in the family or all within
right.
the context of the closeness of whoever the client is involving, in their file, their best friend. You know, we have a lot of files like that now that don't necessarily involve children.
Right.
They might involve just very important people in someone's life.
Cecil, we have 10 seconds to go here. I'm going to throw it over here to Wes.
Clocks at 16. The benefit of being here and watching the shot clock go down. So yeah, very important topic. I think next week we can go to a lot of the buzzword type questions that we get on this and hit some of those.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll look forward to that conversation.